From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. Well, this is where we bring you the latest insights, analysis, and interviews on some of the most pressing issues facing you and your family. So for the next hour, we'll navigate the conflict and the complexities of our nation's capital with clarity, integrity, and a relentless pursuit of truth. So coming up on today's program, President Trump earlier today attended the wake of the slain New York City police officer Jonathan Diller, who was shot in the line of duty, saying police officers, quote, are not given the respect they deserve, end quote. Meanwhile, President Biden, along with former Presidents Obama and Clinton, were in New York City also for a high-dollar fundraiser. But the White House said the president does care.
President Biden is deeply grateful for the sacrifices police officers make to keep our community safe. This shooting is yet another painful reminder of the toll of gun violence, that what it's doing to inflict on families and our communities and our nation. And that's why the president signed more than two dozen executive actions.
It's a reminder of the lawlessness that has been unleashed on this country. That was White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. We'll talk with Missouri Congressman Mark Alford in just a moment. And what appears to be setting the stage for the next step in the Biden administration's two-state solution in Israel, the Palestinian Authority complied with pressure from the Biden administration to form a new government.
We have long urged the Palestinian Authority to form a reform cabinet with new leadership. You've heard the secretary speak to this during his travels in the region. And so now that the PA has appointed a new cabinet, we will be looking to this new government to deliver on policies and implement credible and far-reaching reforms.
That was State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller earlier today. But here's the problem. Mahad Abbas, the 88-year-old Palestinian Authority leader, remains in control. It's basically the same characters. Is this just a cosmetic makeover? We'll be joined by Daniel Flesch, former senior advisor at Israel's mission to the United Nations and a former IDF paratrooper. Recall the Nicaraguan pastors we discussed a few weeks ago. 11 pastors were arrested following a successful evangelistic crusade in Nicaragua. This week, they were sentenced to 12 to 15 years in prison. Britt Hancock, the founder and director of the sponsoring ministry, Mountain Gateway, will be here with those details. And talk about media spin.
I want to get down there and repeal the bad ban on no exceptions abortion. I want to protect IVF and contraception, but I also want to be a champion for health care.
That was Alabama State Representative-elect Marilyn Lanz following a special election win last night in Alabama. Now, Lanz, running on abortion, beat a Republican candidate, which has the media suggesting this is the way 2024 is going to play out. But could there be more to this story? FRC Action's Matthew Carpenter will be here a little bit later. And finally, New York's unprecedented legal pursuit of Donald Trump may be driving other businesses from the state, as the rule of law is sacrificed in the determination to take down the former president. We'll talk about the unintended consequences that could tank the New York economy when we're joined by Stephen Moore, economist, co-founder of the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. Now, remember, as we dive into today's issues, the bedrock principles that guide us here at Washington Watch, faith, family, and freedom, well, those are not just words, but the values that form the very foundation of our nation. Washington Watch starts now.
They're not given the respect. The police are the greatest people we have. There's nothing and there's nobody like them, and this should never happen. And we have to stop it. We have to stop it. We have to get back to law and order. We have to do a lot of things differently, because this is not working. This is happening too often.
That was President Donald Trump earlier today after he attended the wake of Jonathan Diller, the New York City police officer murdered in the line of duty, allegedly by a man with 21 previous arrests. President Biden, as I mentioned, is also in New York, where he will join former Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama at a fundraising dinner expected to net $25 million toward his campaign. Now, is this just another contrast between the candidates and their priorities? Joining me now to discuss this, Congressman Congressman Mark Alford. He serves on the House Armed Services Committee and the House Agriculture Committee. He represents the 4th Congressional District of Missouri. Congressman Alford, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Good to see you, Tony.
Sorry about that. I was talking to Mark earlier today.
That's right.
Too many marks.
I take that as a compliment.
So you have been focusing on the border crisis, the lawlessness it has brought to our cities, and we've seen that play out yet again in New York. Your thoughts on today, two presidents, it's really the tale of two leaders. We've got President Trump visiting with the family, attending this wake, and then we have President Biden joined with former Presidents Clinton and Obama, simply there to raise money.
It was the worst of times with Joe Biden. It was the best of times with Donald Trump. A stark contrast of two people, one a leader and one a feckless leader, who has done nothing but open the gates to our country wide open, let some 9 million illegal aliens into our nation, and really promoted and promulgated disorder, chaos in our nation. You know, Tony, it was some 10 years ago. We're coming up on the 10th anniversary of the Ferguson incidents in which Michael Brown tried to disarm a police officer. That police officer shot and killed Michael Brown. And out of that arose the hands up, don't shoot mantra, a lie that never happened, that the media kept perpetuating. And because of that, Cori Bush is now a member of Congress. She is part of our delegation. She's up for re-election again because of the lies that were told. Ever since that happened, there has been a downward trend of disrespect of law and order, a subversive movement in our country to remove any respect for law and order. This, I believe, is a satanic attack. This is spiritual warfare in America, and we have to stand for what is right.
Well, it is. I mean, it's the spread of lawlessness. The scripture tells us that's going to occur. One of the ways that that's prevented is the presence of morality, the presence of the church. And, you know, this, we're coming up on an extremely important election. Every election is important, but there's so much hanging in the balance. One of the ways that we're salt and light is by engaging in the process.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's why you're seeing people who have never gotten into politics before, myself included, and just till 2 years ago, I had never thought about getting into politics, but I thought our country was so close to going over the edge, and I still think that way. We have so many problems, security issues, and I truly believe that this presidential election and this election season is about security, border security, economic security, personal security, restoring law and order to the United States of America, restoring some sanity. In just a few short decades, we have gone from really a Norman Rockwell America to a Rocky Horror Picture Show. It is horrifying for the average everyday American who just wants their country back. It's time to take back our nation.
Congressman Alford, when you talk about these issues, the election, the radical changes that have taken place in our country in such a relatively short period of time, what do you believe will be the driving issues showing those contrasts between the choices that the American people have this fall?
I think it's simple, order or disorder. You have two choices. The disorder that this current administration has presented on the world stage has created uncertainty. It's created doubts with our world partners. It's emboldened bullies like Xi Jinping, Vladimir Putin, the Iranian mullahs, the Houthis, you name it. We look weak, and everyone is going to pick on the weakling. It's time we get some strength back in the White House. It's time we regain the Senate. It's time we get a great majority leader for the Senate, and it's time that we increase our majority in the U.S. House.
Speaking of weakness, Congressman Alford, I want to get your thoughts on what the Biden administration did earlier this week at the United Nations, where the Security Council voted to impose an immediate ceasefire on Israel as they're trying to eradicate the terrorist group Hamas. The United States, in a rare move, abstained from voting, basically abandoning our historical and strategic ally, Israel.
Well, I think it's a further show of weakness from this administration. Of course, now they're trying to go back and blame it on a word that wasn't in there. They thought some verbiage should be changed. They could have vetoed this thing. We have got to show Israel that we stand behind them. This is not a time for a ceasefire. This is time to finish off Hamas. And, you know, every day I'm in Congress and I walk down those halls of Rayburn going to an Armed Services Committee hearing, I get confronted by these code pink people with their cell phones rolling, and they're trying to confront us and bring sympathy towards Hamas and the people of Gaza. And I tell them one simple thing, Tony. This could all be over in a matter of hours if Hamas would simply release the hostages and surrender. Hamas must be wiped off the face of this earth, and Israel must be defended.
The Biden administration sees it differently. They have been talking about the two-state solution, resurrecting that topic, even though Gaza should put that to rest, since that essentially is what a two-state solution over there would look like. They have been putting pressure on the Palestinian Authority to be in a position to take over both Gaza and the so-called West Bank by reforming. The Palestinian Authority announced a new government, but it's all the same characters.
Look, we've been dealing this since I was a kid. Yasser Arafat was in control. This is not going to change. A two-state solution is not a solution because we know the bad actors will get back into power. The solution to this is for the Palestinian people to admit that this is the land that God gave to the people of Israel, and to say that from the river to the sea is a solution, that is tantamount to wiping Israel off of the face of the earth. This is a beacon of hope and freedom and democracy in the Mideast. We stand behind Israel. A week from today, I will be in Israel with my wife and other members of Congress, hoping to talk. I'm pretty sure we're going to talk with the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. And I will reiterate, at least our standpoint is that we stand firmly behind the state of Israel.
Well, when Congress returns after the Easter break, the supplemental will be up before Congress. The one coming over from the Senate contains the controversial funding for Ukraine. We also have the funding for Taiwan mixed in with Israel. There seems to be stronger support for getting funding to Israel rather than, you know, all of the above. Do you see that being divided and dealt with separately?
I certainly hope so. I hope our Speaker Mike Johnson feels the same way. He has suggested in the past that that's how he feels. We need to, it's for several reasons, Tony. Number one, they promised us that we would have separate single issue bills, and I consider supplemental bills to be in that category as well. I think most importantly, we need to show our complete and our complete support for Israel with a standalone package that has no ties or strings to it, that we support Israel fully. I think that is going to be the strongest message to that nation and to our nation, that why Israel is so special and why we have this this link between our two nations.
And they are in need of our support in a multitude
of
ways. Congressman Mark Alford, so good to see you. Safe travels as you travel to Israel.
Thank you. God bless you, Tony.
All right, folks, we're going to continue the discussion on the situation in Israel after the break, looking a little deeper into the vote that the Security Council took earlier this week and what this remake of the Palestinian Authority, how that will factor into the discussions going forward. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. And by the way, I want to encourage you to continue to pray for Israel. And we're going to have a special day where we're going to have churches all across this country praying for Israel. I'll have more information about that in the days ahead. But if you would like to join us in this effort, simply text the word Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. We have as Bible-believing Christians, I believe we have an obligation to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, the peace of Israel, the entire area. Now, as we were talking about just a few moments ago, this week, the Biden administration allowed a UN Security Council resolution demanding a ceasefire in Israel's war against the terrorist group Hamas to pass. Now, this signals a major shift in longstanding U.S. policy. Many are now asking what effect this shift in policy will have on Israel's war effort. And if Hamas fighters can hold out until summer, will the approaching elections lead to even further abandonment of Israel by our government? Joining me now to discuss this is foreign policy and security analyst Daniel Flesch. He is a former senior advisor at Israel's mission to the United Nations and a former IDF paratrooper. Daniel, welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be here, Tony. Appreciate it.
So Daniel, the reports are that Israel's very close, the IDF's very close in eliminating Hamas. There's still about four battalions totally intact. The others have been kind of dispersed. It's chaotic. They've taken out command and control. But if they're forced to pull back now, they could regroup, and this threat does not go away.
Yes, very true. I mean, the key word here is destroy or defeat. And the question people are wondering is, what does that look like? Defeating Hamas isn't necessarily to wipe out or destroy all 30,000, give or take, fighters they have, but really to no longer allow them to constitute themselves as a political or military force in Gaza. So that could look like a few different ways, particularly taking out the leadership. Right now, Yahya Sinwar and Mohammed Deif, the numbers one and two of Hamas in Gaza, are believed to be in Rafah, in the southern part of the Gaza Strip near the Egyptian border. And so victory in many ways for Israel, in part, looks like either killing them, capturing them, or having them publicly in exile to show that they are no longer a force in Gaza. And beyond that, as you mentioned, there's a few battalions left in Rafah, but no longer allowing them to constitute themselves as a military force. This week alone, we've seen actually Hamas has reconstituted themselves in part in the central northern part of Gaza Strip, particularly a battle at Al-Shifa Hospital or outside Gaza City. So there will be a war even after the current campaign winds down, a guerrilla war most likely to kind of mop up the remains of the Hamas operation. But right now, Israel must and it will go into Rafah to essentially achieve its not only military, but also its political aims vis-a-vis Gaza.
So, Daniel, put in perspective, you served at the United Nations. Put in perspective this week's vote or failure to vote by the United States abstaining in this resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire.
Yeah, so a little context here. Last week, the U.S. put forth a draft resolution to the Security Council that did two key things. First off, it called out and condemned Hamas for the actions on October 7th. And secondly, it tied a permanent and lasting ceasefire, I believe the language was, it tied it to release of hostages. That resolution was vetoed by Russia, China, who have a veto power in the Security Council, as well as, I think, Algeria. Now, Mozambique put forth a resolution earlier this week, as you mentioned, that did a few things very differently. One, it did not even mention Hamas, much less condemn Hamas. In fact, the language it uses is all interested parties. Of course, Israel is a part of the United Nations. Hamas is not. So they're not exactly an interested party. In addition, it called for a ceasefire as an aside to respect the holy month of Ramadan, even though they did not respect the holiday of Simchat Torah or Shabbat back in October. But it called for a ceasefire, and then in the next breath, also called for release of the hostages. So did not tie the two together. And this Security Council resolution, there's a few different kinds, but this one is not binding, at least in the United States interpretation of it. But that's almost beside the point, because the main idea here, as you mentioned, is a change in policy. And not only are the U.S. enemies watching this, but also Israel's enemies are watching this. As you mentioned earlier, Hamas is seeing the growing daylight between the Biden administration and Israel. And they're probably thinking, Sinwar in particular, why they've rejected numerous hostage exchange offers over the past few weeks and couple months, is they're probably thinking, let's just wait some more time until the Biden administration increases pressure on Israel. Let's get further along into the presidential campaign season this summer, and then we'll see what kind of pressure the Biden administration brings down on Israel, and maybe we can actually survive this war.
The announcement today by the Palestinian Authority that they have basically redone their government. I think it's a cosmetic makeover because you still had Abbas is still running things. Is this a step toward the Biden administration being able to advance their two-state solution by putting the Palestinian Authority or wanting to put the Palestinian Authority in control of Gaza?
In part, the reason the administration focuses so much on the PA, the Palestinian Authority, is because there's no other dog in this fight, effectively. There's no other player that you can look to actually have some sort of even technocratic governmental control, bureaucratic control over a population, over an area. So it's almost by a default reaction. But anyone who kind of checks underneath the hood even a little bit realizes the Palestinian Authority is not a viable partner. The language for years has been a viable partner for peace. But they're not even a viable governing authority among their own people. And so looking to them, and so long as Abbas is at the head of the PA, yeah, you can change the cast of characters underneath him, but the fundamental policies and approach and stance towards Israel will not change. So it's a difference without a distinction.
I mean, it's a corrupt entity. They refuse to recognize the right of Israel to exist. It's not much different than Hamas when you look at their relationship toward Israel.
That's actually a very interesting analogy, and it's very true. There's something called the Taylor Force Act, which was passed a few years ago in Congress. Taylor Force was an American veteran who was, I forget which school right now, but he was at business school, and he was on a trip in Israel where he was stabbed to death by Palestinian terrorists. And those Palestinian terrorists are then rewarded with a stipend to right. them and their families for trying to murder Jews. Taylor himself was not Jewish, but he was caught in the crossfire effectively. And U.S. policy is not to give money to the Palestinian Authority so long as they have this pay-for-slave policy.
Right.
And so you're right. They're no different in many ways than Hamas.
And that was money coming through UNRWA that the United States has been giving to the Palestinian Authority and Hamas. Daniel, we're out of time. We'll revisit this conversation because I'm sure we're going to continue to track it as it unfolds.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it.
All right. Daniel Flesch. Yeah, we're going to continue to watch this very, very closely. All right, don't go away. More Washington Watch on the other side of the break as we check in and check on the Nicaraguan pastors being held in prison.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Once again, if you'd like to join us in the effort to pray for and stand with Israel, simply text the word Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. As I've said before, I believe, you know, if you believe the Bible and you see where America is presently, America's future is intertwined with that of Israel. And we need to stand with that country. As Genesis 12 says, those who bless Israel will be blessed. Doesn't mean we agree with everything that they do. And we do. You know, and I communicated that when I met with the prime minister 2 weeks ago. But I believe we need to be standing with them and helping them eliminate the threats that they face. Anyway, we'll continue to track that. Well, over the last few months on Washington Watch, I've discussed the 11 pastors and ministry leaders wrongfully jailed in Nicaragua on sham charges after they led a revival crusade that reached more than 1 million people. Now, this week, those pastors received sentences. They've been in prison. They finally went to trial, and it was a kangaroo court. They were sentenced to somewhere between 12 and 15 years each in prison, and were assessed fines of $80 million per person. Joining now to discuss is Britt Hancock, a missionary to Nicaragua, with the ministry Mountain Gateway, which is a sponsoring ministry. Britt, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Tony. It's great to be back with you.
Now, we've spoken several times about this. There's been several members of Congress that we've met with, you've met with, that have actually written a letter to the ambassador, to the president. But yet, the authorities in Nicaragua went forward with this case and have sentenced these pastors to prison for 12 to 15 years. What's going on?
Yeah, I guess case in name only. You just said kangaroo court. You know, I'm not even sure any kangaroos showed up to this one. You know, there was like no defense evidence presented. There were no witnesses for the defense. That they were actually convicted for a crime that they weren't really tried for. The all the witnesses were hearsay witnesses, second and third party witnesses on the part of the prosecution. And, you know, they like you said, they got 12 to 15 years, and $80 million a piece, over $80 million a piece. That's, you know, from this group, they want over $1 billion. You know,
it's crazy.
It's not enforceable. It's ridiculous.
If I'm not mistaken, there were a couple of attorneys that they had. Those attorneys were actually arrested, and you haven't even been able to find out the whereabouts of those attorneys that were trying to defend them. Is that correct?
Correct. They're in prison, and they were tried along with our pastors. You know, they got 10 years and fined the same $80-plus million fine. And the same thing. I mean, they, you know, it's pretty crazy.
Any movement? I know that you, the State Department has been speaking into this. Members of Congress have been very concerned about a bipartisan effort. Does that appear to reveal that there's any movement on behalf of the Nicaraguan government, that America is watching this and they're not happy about it?
Yeah. We have indications from people on the ground in Nicaragua that they're feeling the pressure. You know, there's a resolution in the House going around for gaining co-sponsors right now. There's a resolution in the Senate. Representative Barry Moore led the one in the House, and Senator Rick Scott led the one in the Senate. Senator Rick Scott also drafted the letter, led the letter to the president. That was sent, I think, to the president on the 15th of March, around there, asking for increased sanctions. And on the, I believe it was Thursday on the 22nd, the president stirred and increased a standing executive order, and they put sanctions on the attorney general in Nicaragua. And so the embassy's engaging and trying to help us, and the mechanisms are moving, and we're very blessed by that.
So what's next?
The Organization for American States has taken our case. The UN's taken our case. The UK Parliament has a resolution that they've been working on for I don't know how long, condemning Nicaragua. Our case will be mentioned there. I think the European Parliament is working on something, and that international pressure is really good. But you know, Jesus is the only one who can move a dictator to do the right thing, and so we really need lots of prayer. You know, if you want to follow things, you can follow us on mountaingateway.org. Just pray for us that, you know, we can continue to stir things. We have now maybe over 70 advocates in both houses, and bipartisan advocates in Congress. We've run into a whole lot of people who care, who are trying to do what they can, and we're continuing to work in Washington to that end.
Well, Brent, we're going to continue to encourage people to pray and talk with our allies on the Hill about this, because this is not, unfortunately, not an anomaly with Nicaragua. They're bad actors when it comes to religious freedom in that country, as we've dealt with many other countries in the same way. Brent, I want to thank you for giving us an update, and we continue to pray for you. And I pray every day for those pastors down there. So
Thank you so much. Let them know
that they are in our prayers, and more than our prayers, we're working on their behalf as well.
Amen. Thank you.
All right, Brent Hancock with Gateway Mountain Ministries. And so you can find out more about their ministry, go to tonyperkins.com. But another item to add to your prayer list: there are believers across the world being persecuted simply for standing for Jesus Christ. All right, anyway, more Washington Watch coming up after this.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to this Thursday edition of Washington Watch, the website, tonyperkins.com. As I mentioned, we are working to pull churches together to stand with and pray for Israel. That effort is underway, and if you want to be a part of that, simply text the word Israel to 67742 so that we can pray for and stand with Israel in a very visible way. Again, that's the word Israel to 67742. Our word for today comes from Numbers chapter 33. Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you have crossed the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you, destroy all their engraved stones, destroy all their mold images, and demolish all their high places. You shall dispossess the inhabitants of the land and dwell in it, for I have given you the land to possess. That's important instructions for not just taking the land, but possessing it. Completely drive out the inhabitants and destroy the instruments of idolatry. As Leviticus 18 states, it was the idolatry and the sordid immorality of the Canaanites that caused them to be, quote, vomited out of the land. If Israel was to occupy the land, they had to obey and worship God. There could be no syncretic faith or this mixture of religions which would weaken the moral and the spiritual foundation of their nation, removing their divine protection and leading to their downfall, which ultimately happened. There is a lesson here for our nation as well. If you'd like to join me each morning on our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. That's one text that can transform your life. Well, a special election for a state representative race in Alabama has now drawn national headlines as the legacy media looks to push a narrative regarding abortion. When Democratic candidate Marilyn Landis won a special election Tuesday to capture State House District 10, national pundits and even the White House rushed to claim this result represents a referendum on abortion. But was that really the case? Joining me now to help break down this election and tell us a little bit more about what was really happening, FRC Action Director Matt Carpenter. Matt, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony. Great to be with you.
All right. First of all, explain what happened on Tuesday in this special election.
All right. So as you pointed out, Tony, we had a special election to fill a vacant seat in Alabama's Alabama House of Representatives District 10. This is a northern Alabama district outside of Huntsville, Alabama, where Democrat Marilyn Lanz prevailed against Republican Teddy Powell, 62% to 38%. And Tony, that is a 30-point swing over the last election in 2022. This district has sort of been regarded as a swing district in the Alabama House of Representatives for some time. The previous incumbent was a Republican who won it by 6 points. So this represents a 30-point swing towards the Democrats.
So how did this issue play into the election, the issue of abortion? Now, Alabama, we know that the IVF case was there before the Alabama Supreme Court. But didn't they turnout was also a factor in this race, was it not?
Absolutely, Tony. I was looking at some precinct-level data, and if you compare the turnout that happened earlier this week in this special election to the 2022 midterm election, it's just 40% of that result. And if you back up even further to the 2020 general election, where you have even more turnout than you do in a midterm generally, you're looking at more like a 35% turnout. So this is a super low turnout election. And you pointed out in your early remarks, Tony, kind of the White House using this as planting a flag for their reelection strategy for President Biden, touting this abortion issue generally. And I would point out, you have this confluence of a super low turnout election with a candidate in Marilyn Lanz who's run for this seat multiple times, so she's got the name ID. Then you're able to channel national television attention on this race. You're going to get a supercharged electorate, and I think you kind of have that perfect storm that's kind of how you explain a 30-point swing, frankly.
So Matt, let me ask you this question. So Lanz, she wins this big swing. She wins this state representative special election. It's headlines essentially saying this is the trend for 2024. But I missed those headlines back in the fall when Louisiana, my home state, had their midterm. They had their elections, which are off-year elections. And the Republicans swept the state, including a very pro-life governor we now have, Jeff Landry. He won. He was the attorney general who actually advanced a number of pro-life battles, even all the way to the Supreme Court. He won in the primary. First time that's happened in a long time. But I must have missed the media headline saying that was a trend.
Right, Tony. I'm not going to hold my breath for the media to trumpet a pro-life victory. And you're absolutely right. I think we need to take each election as its own instance. I mentioned earlier kind of that perfect storm that landed on this one, and you mentioned the Louisiana example as well. And there's plenty to take away from that example. I remember looking at some precinct level data in the Orleans, New Orleans area. And you saw a drop-off in participation among key Democrat voting blocks, 40, 50%. I mean, just catastrophic results. And I didn't really see that make the headlines. So, and, you think back to other special elections. I remember in 2022, you had that Rio Grande Valley special election at Texas 34, where Myra Flores won that. That was, again, a 30-point right. swing in the other direction. Different result in the 2022 midterms when the Democrats won that. So, you get a tight election in these special elections where you have super low turnouts.
So here's the takeaway, as I see it, Matt, is that you just need to vote and ignore what the media is saying about the trends, because you determine the trends by whether or not you show up to vote.
Absolutely. I mean, I mentioned earlier that the result of this one, 62% for Marilyn Lanz, but that 62% is a little misleading here when you talk about a race of 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 votes total. You get a few, around the edges, some different results in some precincts, a few, people talk to their neighbors about the importance of this election, and you can get a dramatically different result.
Yeah. It all comes down to voting. People need to register.
Absolutely.
Folks, you need to register. Need to be informed, and you need to vote. Matt Carpenter, thanks so much for giving us an update.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right. And by the way, folks, there's resources available for you at frcaction.org, election-related resources, and those resources will be increasing as we move toward this fall's election. All right. On another topic, New York State Attorney General Letitia James ran for office on the promise of targeting former President Donald Trump led her to pursue a novel civil fraud case that economic experts now believe will have a chilling effect on business in New York State. Now, this is unprecedented what she's doing. An Associated Press analysis of similar cases dating back 70 years show that the case against former President Trump represents the only time a business in the state was threatened with a shutdown without obvious victims or major losses. When an elected official can use the court system to target a political opponent, what does this mean for the rule of law in our country? And what could this mean for investors and businesses in the state of New York? Joining me now to discuss this is economist Stephen Moore. He's a principal at the Committee to Unleash Prosperity and a distinguished fellow in economics at the Heritage Foundation. Steve, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Good to be with you.
Businesses are now starting to take notice of what New York is doing to President Trump because apparently, as I understand it, and this is more in your league, but what his business was doing is what businesses do in New York. But now they're making it a crime.
Yeah, you made a really key point that if there is, even if there is a crime here and there isn't, who's the victim? There is no victim. This is a clearly victimless crime. Nobody's standing up there, you know, holding up their hand and saying that Donald Trump defrauded them. This is clearly an example of how we have a two-tiered justice system in America. And what they're showing is that, look, if you can, and Donald Trump has quite correctly made this point, Tony, if they can do this to him, they can do it to anybody. And that's why it's having a chilling effect. Why would anybody invest in New York when one of the guys who helped make New York a great city and invested and built buildings and rebuilt the skating rink and really is, you go around Fifth Avenue and you see so much of the development was a result of him. And this is the way to repay him, by trying to take away his, hundreds of millions of dollars that he has earned. Other businessmen and women look at that and say, hell no, I'm not going to invest in New York because they're going to steal my business from me.
Do the authorities in New York care about that? Or is this just a collateral damage that they're really not concerned with as long as they're able to take down Donald Trump?
I think probably a little bit of both. I think there is such a anti-Trump derangement syndrome out there that these people can't even see that that when they want to put him in jail for 500 years, when they want to take away everything that he has, when they want to have these juries that are not impartial, it only makes him stronger, Tony. I mean, every time they come after him, have you noticed that? His opinion polling goes up because Americans have I don't care if you're a liberal, Democrat, Republican, Americans have an innate sense of fairness. And right. Anybody who looks at these trials knows that they're unfair. And we need a justice system that weighs both sides, and that's not happening. But I think when you ask, do people in New York, the politicians care? I wonder, because they have the highest taxes, they have the highest crime, they have the worst schools, they do nothing to fix their city, and they act as if the people who create the wealth are the problem.
Well, I mean, again, if it's street crime, I get it. As a former police officer, financial issues, like financial crimes and what they're pursuing there, it's a little more of a struggle. But what I see here, just as, the casual observer of this, is that their efforts toward him are so exaggerated and unprecedented that you just can't help but see something is not right here.
Well, everyone knows that these are bogus charges, and almost all of them are. I mean, how many different lawsuits are there against him now? I can't even keep track. Now, in some of them may have crossed the line. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. But I'm telling you that in so many of these cases, there is nothing there, and no ordinary American would be charged with these things. As you just said, they've had these laws on the books for 70 years, and no one has ever been prosecuted, and now it's Donald Trump. Do you think is there anybody who thinks that's a mere coincidence?
Right. Well, and there's people who are not even supported. I mean, they're opponents of Donald Trump in the business world who are horrified by the state's actions, because they know that if the shoe were on the other foot, that they could be the target of this type of persecution.
And that's why this is a real danger to the, you know, to the business environment, which is already lousy in New York. But I know, let me just say one last thing, if I may, Tony. As you know, I work as an economist for Donald Trump. And I honest to God's truth, I wake up sometimes in the middle of the night with a cold sweat, and I fear that there's going to be a banging on my front door, and I'm going to go to the front door, and there's going to be three FBI agents with machine guns to take me away. And what is my crime? I work for Donald Trump. Now, you may say that's an exaggerated fear, but some of my colleagues, that's exactly what happened.
No, I've heard that from many of your colleagues, yes, who have faced that. And this is, I mean, beyond just this case in New York, as you say, the cascading number of cases, and I can only describe it as persecution. It's gone beyond prosecution.
By the way, sometimes there was a, sorry to interrupt, but there was a funny CNN headline the other day where they meant to say prosecution, and they used the word persecution.
Well, Freudian slip. Freudian slip.
This is not a prosecution.
This is undermining the rule of law in our country. I mean, what makes our system work, what makes our economy work, is that everyone has to play by the same rules, and you know what the rules are.
And not only that, but it's also, this is kind of the justice that is persecution that happens in third world countries,
yeah,
that don't believe in the idea that we live by laws. And it's a scary situation for the United States right now. And incidentally, Donald Trump will be on the ballot in 6-7 months. And my feeling is, let the American people be the jury here. I mean, you've got a number of states that don't even want him on the ballot.
Do you think that a reform-minded president, a disruptor like President Trump, if he were to return to office, could bring stability back by cleaning out this threat to the rule of law?
I hope so, but it's so deeply embedded. I mean, you know, Tony, you've been in this game a long time. I've been in this game a long time. The deep state is not a figment of our imagination.
No.
You know, these agencies, whether it's the FBI, the Justice Department, the State Department, the Foreign Aid Departments, I always tell Donald Trump when I see him, it's amazing you accomplished, sir, what you did, given that 95% of the civil service was against you.
Right, right. There is a deep state, and it runs very, very deep. Stephen Moore, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Happy Easter. Thank you so much.
All right. Same to you, my friend. Another reason, folks, we need to be praying. We need good men and women that will enter into the political process and do so with the full assurances that they can do, as Americans, they have a right to do this, and they'll be protected under our laws. I think it's very, very dangerous what's happening in this country. And it's number one, we need to pray. We need to pray. We need to pray for the truth, whatever that truth is. I mean, we know there is truth, right? I'm not praying for any certain outcomes other than the truth is known, that we would know the truth and that we would vote. Pray, vote. Vote for those who are most closely aligned with biblical truth. And then you and I have to be committed to stand for that truth. Unintimidated. We cannot be intimidated by the left. Encourage your friends to tune into Washington Watch so they know how to vote, know how to pray, and they'll be encouraged to stand. All right, folks, until next time, I leave you once again with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.